This episode is marked for sensitive content. Please check content warnings in the episode description before listening. This week on the Breakup Breakdown.
And as soon as I walked in, I see this guy and I'm like, oh my gosh, this man is beautiful. Exactly my type. That was kind of like, for me, almost love at first sight. We ended up getting married within 6 months. I definitely felt it changed the dynamic of our relationship just a month or so after we got married. And he says, maybe this was a mistake. I asked myself, do you really want to live the rest of your life like this? I do not want to live the rest of my life with this man just feeling like I'm not a person anymore.
If you're out in the dating world, everyone wants to end up with someone exactly their type. But sometimes that fantasy can turn into an absolute nightmare. Welcome to season 7, episode 17 of the Breakup Breakdown. I'm your host and lead relationship PI, Abby Murphy. And this week we've got a divorce story where our interviewee's therapist suspected something was going on that she had never even considered. And if you're wondering where all of these crazy breakup stories come from, this podcast would not be possible without submissions taken from the submission form in the episode description. If you head down there, you can submit either your own breakup story, you can nominate a friend, you can submit something you've seen on TikTok that you want more details on, or if you want to get a little nosy, I can even slide into somebody's DMs that maybe you've been curious about their breakup story, and I can ask them if they'd be interested in coming on and telling their breakup. You know, if it's like someone you know from college and they're kind of soft launching a breakup, we all get a little curious, admit it. Again, that submission form is in the episode description. And if you want to jump to a certain part of the interview, timestamps are in the episode description. Hey, Heartbreakers, welcome back to another episode of the Breakup Breakdown. This week, we've got a submission where someone said they got married because of religious pressure, but it's not what led to the divorce. But before we get into that, every week we give a shout out to a different domestic violence organization just to raise more awareness. And this week we are shouting out the Lighthouse in Fairfield County, Ohio. The Lighthouse is a private nonprofit agency dedicated to promoting the existence of a safe and peaceful home and family life and environment through quality services and focuses on the prevention and education of family violence. For more details on this organization, head down to the episode description. Okay, so into this week's submission. So what first caught my eye from this submission is that it mentioned getting married because of religious pressure. And I don't know if you've been listening to this podcast long enough, but there was like a season, maybe like season 2 or 3, where I was just so excited anytime I saw like a Mormon story. I have like a hyperfixation on like BYU, the secret lab of Mormon wives. I think that whole culture is so interesting. So when I saw this, I immediately thought this is where it was going. And turns out it was not where it was going, because this story actually starts with a woman in her 20s and a man who was somewhat significantly older than her. And she says that they got married about 6 months into dating, which is pretty quick. I mean, it's nothing crazy. Like, I mean, it's not like a 2 month situation or like a 6 week situation where you're just trying to like, you know, speed things up. So 6 months, pretty fast. But she said about 8 years into their relationship, she decided to pack up all of her stuff and leave. She said that people in her life and also her therapist noticed this one thing and kept telling her that they believed that there was something happening in her marriage that she had not even considered or picked up on and honestly was in complete disbelief about. That is, of course, until she got the courage to get out of this relationship. So let's find out how these two got together, but also, what was that thing that tore them apart and eventually got her to leave that she didn't even notice? We'll find out when we break down this week's breakup.
I was about 22 and it was the week before my birthday, actually. And I was in like the nearest big city to my small town. And one of my good friends, I was supposed to meet with her and shop. And she's like at an event and she goes, there's a guy here who I think you would like. And I'm like, okay, fine, whatever. I hadn't really been in a relationship for 2 or more years. So I was like, whatever. I go meet up with her. I was at a local bar. And as soon as I walked in, I see this guy and I'm like, oh my gosh, this man is beautiful. Like beautiful. Exactly my type. Can't even tell you, like, tall, muscular, tan, just great smile, everything about it. So it's kind of like, for me, almost love at first sight. And I get in there and he's in the group with my friend. So I go over, of course, and introduce myself. And the first thing I look at is like, hey, do you have a ring on? Like, this is important. And he did not. And so we just start chatting and we kind of just hit it off. He was very charming, very charismatic. Lots of things I really liked about him. Just exactly when you're 22 years old, told what you think you want in a man. I mean, exactly. And just fell head over like that very night. The funny thing was, though, is he would not tell me his age that night at first, because it turns out he was actually 35 at the time. That, once I found that out, was a little surprising, but I was like, okay, we can still see how this goes. I've always been mature for my age. We'll see how this goes.
How do you guys end up in a relationship? That's a pretty lofty age gap. I mean, does he make a move? Do you make a move?
So he got my number that night. I was out of town for like the week following it. And then when I got back into town, we went on our first date. It wasn't a great first date. He kept getting on his phone a lot, which I was like, this is annoying. And this was a while ago, back in 2011, before like phones are what they are now. But he said it was dad or his granddad was in the hospital and just not doing well. So I was like, okay, totally understandable. Awesome that you care about your granddad and have a relationship with him. So I'm going to forgive that and we'll go on some more dates. And I move kind of fast, I will admit that, when it comes to relationships. We started kind of becoming inseparable. At the time, I was still in school, so still technically living at home, but I was getting ready to move in with my friends that I mentioned before to the bigger city in our area. I moved down there, and he and I just spent literally all of our time together. All of our time together. Said, I love you pretty quickly. Totally just fell for each other. He did have a son that he had like every other weekend, so we'd spend time with him too. Met him relatively quickly also. And yeah, just really fell for each other.
So, talk to me about the length of your relationship and at what point throughout however long you guys have been together, like when do the red flags start to show themselves and what are those red flags?
So I would say the red flags probably showed themselves relatively early, but because of my age, I didn't see them or ignored them mostly. I remember like a specific one was we were watching the movie Moulin Rouge, which I love. The end of it is quite tragic. And I was crying and like upset about it because I'm emotional when it comes to things like that. And I remember afterwards, he wanted to get hot and heavy in the bedroom. And I'm like, I'm not sure that I'm in the mood for that as I'm crying. And he got kind of angry about it. He's like, well, I just watched this movie with you, so why are we not doing this? And I'm just like, okay. And that was like probably my first real sign that some things were going on. But of course, I ignored it. Didn't have a lot of experience in that department because I was a pretty sheltered child. Grew up in a very religious family. Mother was very, very religious and just all sex is bad. Everything is bad when it comes to that, except for procreation. So for me, that was a new experience for the most part. But other than that, things still seem to be really, really good. And just like I said, good looking guy, successful at his job, seemed very charming. But we ended up getting married within 6 months.
Is this because of religious pressure from your parents?
My mother. One of my best high school friends got married early December that year, and my mother was invited to that wedding. Well, he and I had just moved in together at Thanksgiving right before this, and my roommate, who was in the bigger city with me, moved in with us also. Well, her mother was also invited to this wedding, and they sat next to each other at the wedding. And her mother told my mother that we had moved in, and that was not something I had disclosed to her because I knew she would disapprove. She was furious. I mean, she just, no, you do not do that. You save everything for marriage. It takes two to tango, is what she actually said to me that night when she confronted me. Not a fun experience. Kind of ruined that night for me. My mother never cries. She's not an emotional person, but she actually had tears in her eyes when she was confronting me about it. So the next day, my ex and I were sitting at Steak and Shake, and we decided, hey, let's get married to kind of make her happy. And his parents were also very religious, so make them happy. Even though he's 35, you wouldn't think he would really care that much about that, but he did. So we decided, okay, we're just gonna get married, gonna go to the courthouse, do it, maybe take one person with us or allow our parents to come if they want to, but we're not gonna do a big thing about it. Just that's going to be it. And so a few weeks later, we got married.
Wow. At the time, did it feel like the right decision? Or when you were like saying your vows at the courthouse, were you thinking, oh God, like I'm 22, I'm 23, what am I doing?
So we ended up not getting married at the courthouse because his parents were very controlling also and took over the whole wedding. Yeah, so it was a wedding with like 20 people. That was it. It was on a Thursday. We both went to work the next day. It wasn't anything big, but at the time, because of my religious upbringing, it was so easy to make all these decisions to get to this that I kind of took it as like, oh, this is God's sign that this is supposed to happen and meant to be. So because it's so easy to get to this point, everything's falling into place. It's meant to be. So I didn't have any reservations at that time. And in my area, getting married at 23 is relatively normal.
You guys get married and Do things feel like you're still kind of in a normal relationship, just like the only thing that's changed is your status, that you've gone from dating to married? Or does that kind of change the dynamic of your relationship?
I definitely felt it changed the dynamic of a relationship because to me, marriage is like super important. When you make that commitment, it's not as easy to walk away. I mean, we were living together, but when you're living together, you can still, we didn't own the house, we were renting. It would have been easy to walk away. But because we lived together and were married, it wasn't an easy thing to walk away. And things started to kind of take it, like, he made some really nasty comments pretty much off the bat. I remember it was probably just a month or so after we got married, and his son, who was 6 at the time, was kind of being a little bit of a brat, as 6-year-olds can be. And I rolled my eyes, and I was already annoyed because I was doing all the cleaning in the house and they were playing video games. And I just rolled my eyes, and he followed me into our bedroom and just like quietly berated me for rolling my eyes and being upset that his son was kind of being a brat. And I remember as he was leaving the room, and I'm sobbing after this berating, and he says, "Maybe this was a mistake." So at 23, couple months after getting married, I'm being told maybe this was a mistake by this man who's 36 now. So 36 and 23, there's a big, big dynamic there. I'm trying to learn to be a wife as well as a stepmom, and just felt like everything I was failing at, but I didn't feel like I could leave.
You talked earlier about the red flag that you noticed was kind of like this pressure in the sexual domain of your life. Does that continue? Like, do those same types of red flags sprinkle themselves throughout the relationship? And if so, what do they end up later revealing?
He ended up, this was a huge contentious part of our marriage. I mean, just constant contention. We were never doing it enough for him, like literally ever. I'd say normal is like once or twice a week, and that was not what he would consider normal. I did not have a high drive, and I would try to tell him I don't have a high drive. I never have been that kind of person. And he would literally tell me that you're wrong. You just don't find me attractive, and you need to try harder at finding me attractive. Like there's something wrong here, or there's something wrong with you. He would tell me all of his other girlfriends never had any issues with drive. They always were excited to be with him. And I would sit there and be like, but there's books about this, about some women just don't have a high drive, and I just don't. And he would still tell me, even though I would find these articles and these books and try to explain this to him, that I'm wrong. You're wrong. And then I would tell him about friends I had who had the same experience. And he loved using this phrase, birds of a feather flock together. And he's like, well, they just say that because you find like finds like. And so you just find people that are just like you. And but that's not normal. Most people aren't like that. So this became a long running thing. Like I said, he just thought we would always should always do it more. And it became an issue also of I struggle with finishing massively. It's something that I've learned that is very, very common in women, but he didn't believe that it was common in women. So even when we would have sex, it was this pressure to perform. And by perform, I mean finish. So as time goes on in our relationship, he's like, well, let's try this and let's try this. So he started introducing different toys into the relationship. And a lot of the things he would bring in would be like, dildos or vibrators or whatever. But things would still take a lot of the time, like 45 minutes for me to complete anything. And a lot of times it would get painful. And if, though, I ever said anything or tried getting out of it, which sounds awful to say about your husband, but I would try to get around it and I would say, well, let's just do a quickie. I wasn't opposed to sex. It just became a thing of being opposed to me having to finish because it became so much pressure. He just would get so mad at me for it. And as time went on, I think I realized a lot of it came down to insecurity for him. He was a very, very insecure man in general. Like I said, he was very muscular. After we got married, he started doing testosterone to bulk up in the gym and whatever, and would order it through a buddy at the gym. And he even talked about getting me testosterone so that I would amp up my drive, like injecting myself with it. So I was to the point where I was so desperate to make this man happy that I actually considered it, which is insane. And probably would have royally screwed me up. So I never did actually do it, but he bulked up, went from like 165 pounds to like 215, and it was all muscle.
Wow.
So then you throw in like roid rage, which is a real thing. And there were times we would have had sex 5 days in a row, and I would have had a headache, which I have a history of migraines, and he would scream at me. And I mean, scream at me. And I would just sob and be like, I don't, it was all on me. It was all on me. And I would sob and be like, I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm just trying so hard. I literally pray about, I literally
Praying to
pray.
God.
Yes.
Please.
I know that sounds absolutely insane,
No, I know
but
it's not. Like I'm on my knees, literally.
yes, please just make this easier, like for me, because I need this marriage to work. Because I was still in what I thought was in love with this man and wanted to spend the rest of my life with this man. I had my whole life built up with him, and it just wasn't getting better, and it wasn't getting better, and it wasn't getting. And he was even coming up with crazy ideas, more crazy, not more crazy than the testosterone. I don't think anything's more crazy than that. But like, he was like, "Well, maybe your mom drugged you as a child and like gave you something that took away your sex drive." I'm like, I don't think that exists.
No, that's insane. That's
I agree.
literally insane.
I agree. He also would regularly accuse me of being a lesbian. I mean, regularly accuse me of being a lesbian or asexual. And I have a sister who's a lesbian. She's been with her partner for many, many years. And he's like, well, maybe you're just like her. But then like the next sentence would say, well, she's not actually a lesbian. She just has issues from her upbringing that made her a lesbian. So I'm like, okay, you don't believe lesbians exist, but you believe I might be one because I don't find you, according to you, attractive enough to have sex with you every single day and like jump your bones, as he would sometimes say, as I'm walking in the room. And that was our whole marriage.
I'm curious, do you think your strict religious upbringing had any bearing on your relationship with sex, or do you think this is just purely biological?
Biological.
Yeah, biological. I'm like, why can't I think of the word biological?
I think it was a mixture of both. At that age, when I was younger, I thought maybe it was all religion. I mean, when you grow up hearing sex is bad in the back of your head, no matter what, and it's only used for procreation, you start to, I mean, that's my whole upbringing. So, and I had five older siblings as a little bit of background there. And my oldest sister had two kids at 15 and 16. And so my mom was just always trying to push me in another direction of not doing anything like that. And all of my other siblings also did some crazy stuff. Well, like my sister being a lesbian, my mom very much disapproved of that. So, in a big sense, and I actually have had a therapist tell me that, I kind of married a personality type like my mother when I married my ex. Very controlling of my emotions and what I can do, and very judgmental of everything I do. So I do think it played a big role, but after a while, I do think it's biological too. Like if it takes me 45 minutes, even when I'm by myself, like there's something biological there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think a lot of women would say that that's mostly average. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think people are just knocking it out left and right, like 5 minutes after 5 minutes. You know, the old saying is women are ovens and men are microwaves. It's like they just go, 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 go. When women are like, hang on, like let's preheat for a second. So you deal with this pressure to perform for how long, and how do we get to the end of your marriage?
This was 7, 8 years, almost 8 years into the relationship. He started kind of pulling away. It wasn't in a way that was like super obvious to me. He had always, throughout our entire relationship, like stayed the night at a friend's, which I know saying right now sounds like, yeah, dummy, why didn't you see that? But he loved to go out and drink with his friends, and I'm an introvert and didn't want to go out and stay up at all night at like bars. So I was like, whatever, I don't care. But it was a big contentious point in our marriage in the beginning because he would stay out and not communicate, and I was just always like up in the middle of the night, worried that he was dead in a ditch or something. And I had lost a brother that way years ago. So it was something that was like really serious for me. And he never respected that ever. He still would just stay out and not communicate. So as we're 7 years in, him staying out all night again, not something new, but he was doing it more often. But he was also being just mean, which sounds funny because he was kind of mean the whole marriage, but this was like intentionally mean and hurtful. He would go out of his way to tell me how stupid anything I was that I liked. Like, I love musicals. And he would say, oh, you're stupid for liking that. Nobody likes musicals. And I'm like, no, actually, there's a pretty good portion of the population that likes musicals. And nope, you're stupid. You shouldn't like musicals. And I remember specifically one night he comes home and I'm watching Beauty and the Beast, the live version one. And he's like, this is just really dumb. Why are you even watching this? Why are you wasting your time? And he just kept poking and poking and poking. And it sounds so stupid, but you're 7 years of this. And I snapped, and I never lose my temper. And I screamed at him, and he just got this slight smile. And it was kind of like, I think that's when I first started waking up to like, oh, you're not a nice person. You are enjoying the fact that I'm upset right now and pushing me away and purposely pushing me. So I was kind of happy at the time because I didn't have to deal with the sex aspect anymore because we weren't really having sex anymore. He was starting to sleep in another bedroom and he claimed it was because I didn't sleep well and he didn't want to wake me up with a snoring, blah, blah, blah. So one of my good friends at the time, I had a group of soccer moms that I hung out with because like it's my ex-stepson played soccer and we were hanging out and I was telling her about the way he'd kind of been being mean lately and she goes, it sounds like he's having an affair. I'm like, no, there's no way. No way. I was so adamant. There's no way where he's having an affair. Absolutely not.
Why were you so stubborn in that belief? If I'm being forced to have sex 5 days in a row for a couple of years and all of a sudden we're not banging anymore, I'm thinking, well, he's doing something.
I don't know. It was like a mental block, I guess. I was so trusting, so trusting of him. And just, he was, again, started dating him at 22 years old. At this point, I'm getting ready to turn 30. My entire 20s, the whole part of where I developed essentially as an adult, was with this man who had emotionally manipulated and controlled me for a very long time. So when she said that, I was just like, absolutely not. No way. No way. Like, he wouldn't ever do that to me. He's never cheated on anybody ever. I had never been cheated on either. So, not that I'd had a lot of relationships at that point, but I just was adamant about it. But I did confront him one day about him just being mean. And he started talking about being unhappy and asking if I was unhappy. And I was like, I thought I was. I was not, but I thought I was at the time and just didn't understand where things were at. And I was like, well, why don't we go to counseling or whatever? And he's like, I'm not the one with the problem. You are. So I went to a counselor and start telling her my story. And she goes, it sounds like a man who's having an affair.
Damn.
And I. Like, that was one of the first things she said off the bat. And I was like, no, he's not. But that finally started like getting the wheels turning and started making me actually look into it. So this then, back at this time period, we never shared location with each other. Like, that wasn't a thing on our phones. I never looked in his phone. Like, we did, that's not something we did. We didn't look in each other's phones. But I was curious. I was like, okay, he's, let's just look. And you can look up on your mobile carrier what phone numbers are called or texted. You can't see the texts, but you can look up what phone numbers are called or texted. So I did this at work one day and started going through every single number that he'd ever called or texted in the last few months and like the ones that he was doing a lot of. And so there was one number I didn't recognize. It wasn't in my phone. It wasn't his good friends that he's always spending time with or said that he was spending time with. And I bought one of those background check things, like those websites where you can type in a phone number and it'll tell you who the name is and where they live and all that, which is really creepy, but I did. And it's a woman. And I'm like, okay. So I start diving into who she is. And as I said, I'm 30 at the time, and it's a 50-year-old woman who works at his dental office. And I'm like, oh, this is his hygienist. So he's texting 3,000 times a month with his dental hygienist and
Oh my
having
God.
70-minute conversations with his dental hygienist. I mean, that's kind of weird, right?
Yeah, I
Yeah.
would say so.
So I go back all the way to July of 20, whatever, 18 was when they first text. And it was at like 12:30 in the morning. So he must have been out drinking that night and ran into her somewhere. And that's how they started talking and kind of went through all the times, things I had on my calendar. The first night his son played varsity soccer at high school that he missed and didn't see and told me like some bullcrap reason. No, he was on the phone with her. So he missed his son playing varsity soccer for the first time so that he could talk to the woman he was having an affair with.
Oh my God.
And I find all this out, I think it was in August and it was, or late July. It was late July, early August, and I held on it. Like you said, let's let it cook. I just held it to myself and didn't say anything to him and just started trying to figure out what I was going to do and trying to decide what I was going to do. Went and talked to a lawyer, but I never said anything to him. And he was home so rarely and was so preoccupied with everything else that he didn't even notice that I was like not doing anything and so withdrawn and barely speaking to him. One night, there was a big festival in the town we lived in, and he went off with his friends, and I was with the soccer moms, and I had been drinking, and I texted him some stuff that was like, you don't even care about me. Like, you hate me. Like, don't even want to be with me. And the next morning, he's like, what was that all about? I was like, oh, it was nothing. I was just drunk and upset. Then I finally got the courage, and I was like, whose number is this? And I rattled off the phone number to him, and he goes, I don't know. And I go, you text them 3,000 times last month. Don't tell me you don't know. His next sentence out of his mouth was, is this something your therapist brought up? Like, makes you think? And I go, just stop. And he's like, so then he admits that he's been talking to her and he goes, well, we never had sex. And I go, that's bullshit. I know how much you like sex. I know how much you want sex. Don't even try to say that to me. And that was essentially the conversation. Then he left after that and said he needed time to think.
And what happened after that?
Well, then I looked on his phone and saw that, not on his phone, but on the carrier, and it said he called her as soon as he left.
He's like, we've been caught.
Pretty much exactly that. He and I then are just in this weird limbo. I don't even know how to describe it. We're being very cordial to each other, essentially roommates. Even though we'd already kind of been just roommates for the past year, it was still like this different vibe because he knew I knew. And I had actually had a trip planned for Labor Day week to go see my sister who's down in Florida. And I was like, I'm going to go on this trip still. I don't want to talk to you at all the whole time I'm down there. Do not text me. Do not call me. I just don't want to talk to you. I want to take this time to like think things through. But I also sent him an email kind of spelling out like, I'm willing to stay in this marriage, which is insane. And I was doing that more so for my stepson's sake than for either of our sake. But you would have to do these things. You're going to have to go to counseling with me. You're going to have to tell me all the details. I wanted all the details of him with this girl, lady, older woman. There were a few other things I laid out, and you have to block her on everything. You can't talk to her anymore. But I don't want to hear your decision until I get back. So I go to Florida. And of course, my sister and her wife are like, you need to get a divorce. I'm down there for the whole week. The only time he contacted me was over dog food, which the food had been sitting on our front porch for a day, so I don't know how he didn't see it, but he didn't. And I actually got on Tinder while I was down there, started talking to some guys, because at then I realized I'm like, this is over. Like this is over. Part of what I realized was I asked myself, do you really want to live the rest of your life like this? I do not want to live the rest of my life with this man in this feeling, in this space, without having trust in my marriage and just feeling like I'm not a person anymore. So when I got back, I wanted to see how he would be when I got back. And he had plans to go out with his buddy that night. Gone for a week and you're going to go out with your buddy, but okay. And the next day, my dog had an emergency bladder problem and had to have surgery and all these things. So then I'm like, okay, I got to stick around for this. But after a week of that, I went to my mom's to help her with something. And I'm like, can I move in with you? My husband's had an affair. This is what he's been doing. Can I move in with you? And can I bring my dogs? Because that's all I really cared about at that moment. And she said, yes. And of course, I will help you out. And my favorite thing, though, is she said, and if he had an affair, then you have a biblical, legitimate reason to get a divorce. That was one of the first things she said.
Did you immediately run to the courthouse, grab the papers, and start serving them? How do you have this conversation saying, I know we've been together for 7 years, but like, yeah, it's over.
So, no, I didn't say anything to him, actually. So that week, because it was, so this was all on a Sunday that I had the conversation with my mom. That week, I started packing up while he was gone. He'd be out at like a soccer game or with his friends or at work, and I'd get home or at the gym and I'd start packing. And he didn't even notice. He didn't notice me starting to pack things up. And I would take them over to my mom's when he wasn't home. And throughout that whole week, I did that. And come Friday, so that was started Sunday, come that Friday, I took the day off work, but I got up when he got up and we both got around like we normally would. And he went to work and I packed up everything else. My mom came with her SUV and I had my SUV and put all the rest of my stuff in there and moved out while he was gone at work and my stepson was at school. So I texted him and I was like, hey, are you coming home for lunch today? And he said, yes. I go, okay, well, I won't be there and the dogs won't be there. I'll send you an email later today explaining why. And he didn't respond. So I had had an email all tucked up already, which why emails, I don't know, but that's what I did. And it pretty much went on to explain like why I was leaving him, how I felt extremely disrespected in our marriage, and how I just, if you didn't want to be with me, why didn't you just leave? Why go and have an affair for almost a year and do this stupid game of like trying to play two sides, but stay with me and never once ask for a divorce? You tell me you're unhappy once when I confront you about why you're being so mean. And I just spelled that all out for him. And he emailed me back and legitimately said, I was never disrespectful to you. I blah, blah, blah. You kind of, he turned it all back on me, which was an exact thing of what he did our entire marriage. I mean, everything in our marriage always got turned around into my fault. I would ask him to start picking up his shoes and socks more, and he would say, I didn't do enough around the house. Like, every little thing that I would ask him to do, that's how he was. And so I was done. But I was nice to him, as I think often when you're in relationships like that and have been manipulated into believing certain things about people. I still was worried about him and his son. I was actually very worried about his son because at that point, He was in high school. All of his friends were friends of mine and friends of his dad's. And I didn't want anything to like get out there that would make it hard for him. But I also just didn't want the drama. I hate drama. I didn't post anything on Facebook. I didn't go out and tell everybody he had an affair. Like, I just, so by February the following year, we were officially divorced.
How did that feel?
Wonderful, because I was trying to buy a house and I couldn't buy the house until our divorce was finalized.
Are you going to be finally free of this man for the last 8 years or 9 years or however long it'd been at that point?
Yeah, I mean, at that point, it was over. It was 8.5 years. So I was very happy. I dated a ton during, like, while we were separated, which was funny because he asked me, he's like, do you want to, like, do a separation instead of just divorce? And I asked him, I'm like, why would we separate? All that's going to do is just drag it out longer and we're not getting back together. So why would we separate? And he was like, oh, good point.
That's the logic I've never understood. Just exactly like what you said. Like, why wouldn't you just leave me? Why wouldn't you just divorce me? Like, if this isn't working for you, if you want to have sex with other people, divorce is absolutely an option. Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
It didn't make sense to me either. And I don't know if it was because he'd been divorced before, because he had been married to his son's mom. And they were together about 7 years, which, funny enough, I find out after everything, he cheated on her too.
You're kidding.
And I remember specifically asking him about if he ever cheated on her. And he said, no, he didn't start dating anybody until after they were officially separated. No, not true. He cheated on her. All these people in my life knew that, and not a single person told me that.
You're kidding. So
Nope.
who told you?
I actually called his sister the day I left him. She and I were pretty close. And I asked her straight up, I go, did he cheat on his ex-wife? And she said, yes. I was like, that's what I thought. Thank you for being honest. But I don't know if that would have been enough to like make me see it anyway, because I was so blind to it.
Can I ask about the cheating story with him and his first wife? I'm wondering if he just has like a thing for dental hygienists.
I actually don't really know any details. And he harbored a lot of that. I think he kind of drove a wedge between the two of us because we didn't speak to each other. There was no communication there. Even though her son was with us, and towards the end of the relationship, I was his main person that like took him to all of his soccer practices and games because his dad was too busy doing whatever. And he was living with us more at that time because we were closer to his school than she was. But she did text me after I left him, and she says, I don't know what's going on with you two, but I just want to know that you've been a wonderful mom to stepson, and I hope you guys can work it out because I love that you're in his life and you've been really great for him. And that meant a lot, but it also made me realize that my ex was planting seeds, I think, in both of our heads to make sure she and I never had any kind of relationship whatsoever so that he can control the different aspects there.
Oh, and how sad for your stepson. I mean, to see that being his father figure and like his male role model. I mean, I'm sure he's not fully aware as to the intimacies of what went down, but I mean, to have two women kind of scorned by the same man sucks.
So that was one thing that actually, like the whole thing with the way I left him, the only d regret I have is the day I left, which was a Friday. Stepson had a soccer practice. My ex-husband had another soccer mom take him home, and he went out with his friends that night. And so my ex-stepson went home to me having moved out and the dogs not being there and his dad not being there. And I think, what kind of person does that to a 15-year-old? But I also know, I mean, there's other stories that I was going to tell you that I kind of forgot about. Like, I actually had a miscarriage. And the day I found out I had a miscarriage, he dropped me off at home and went to the gym. So he's that kind of person.
Maybe not the most empathetic is what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't think he has feelings whatsoever. Kind of just, I've realized, a bad person.
You mentioned being in therapy and talking to a therapist. So, talk to me about your healing journey and just trying to unpack basically what the last nearly decade of your life had been like at that point.
So I would say that the worst thing about, I think, getting a divorce after you've been together that long is everything goes up in smoke. Your whole future of what you thought it was going to be your future just goes up in smoke. And it's just like this blank slate. And that's very scary for somebody like me who likes to control things and have plans. I'm a big planner. But I did not go to therapy right away. I had been going to a therapist until I left him, and then I stopped, which really sounds counterproductive, but whatever. And I was living with my mom, which didn't make it easy. Very isolated during that time period, and living again with my mother, who's very religious, who, when I said, I don't deserve this and I deserve to be treated better, said to me, we only deserve what God gives us. So there's a lot of aspects of going back and forth and trying to like maybe go to church with her and be more connected back to religion than I had been for the last few years. And buying my house is actually what saved me, I think. It was this cute little 60s house that needed a lot of updating, had never been updated. And it was during COVID, but Home Depot was open. So I would go there all the time and I just worked on my house and painted and changed out flooring and resanded hardwood floors and did all these things that was very therapeutic to me and helped me scream and cry when nobody was around and just get out that energy and but also see immediate satisfaction in the work I'm doing. And that for me, it was my biggest therapy, I always say.
When you say scream and cry, what's the primary emotion that you're feeling as you're kind of purging the emotions within you?
I swear it went through like the entire gambit, like anger, a lot of anger, just again asking why in the world, but also like missing that family aspect. I mean, he had become my family. He had driven away all my friends. I didn't have close relationships really with friends anymore because all my friends prior to him, he had convinced me were bad people. And then when I was with him, he would kind of control who I was friends with. He would tell me, oh, so and so, this female is really, really cool. And her husband, we can do double dates and hang out. And as soon as I would get close to her, he would then start coming up with reasons for why I shouldn't hang out with her anymore. So he didn't have any like good friends other than my coworkers and some of these soccer moms. So I not only lost my family, I lose most of my friends because I can't see them very often. And it just was, yeah, bizarre. It was crazy.
So when you finally finish your house, do you almost feel like your emotional healing and the fixing up of your house sort of coincided? Like, did you walk into that house and go, okay, I've done what I needed to do in both places?
I actually, yes, in a lot of ways, absolutely felt that way. My house wasn't entirely done when I moved in, but my mom was ready to get my dogs out. So she was like, hey, I helped you pack up. And I'm like, okay. So I move out and but it was like little trim work things. It wasn't anything that wasn't livable. And but I did. But then as I'm living there, and it's the first time I've ever lived alone in my life. It's just me and my dogs. And it was kind of lonely. And I'm like, well, this sucks. But I'm not gonna get back on the dating apps because those suck. And I just didn't really want to date. My now husband reached out to me on Facebook, so that kind of just changed everything for me.
Oh, tell me about that. I love a redemption story. So how long after your divorce did he reach out, and what was his opening line?
So this is like really, really crazy. I mean, not crazy, crazy, but like I said, my marriage was done for a year before I left. So when the divorce was finally done, the grief was more to do with losing the family in that aspect than it was being in love with him. Like, I was angry at him for doing what he did to me, but I didn't love him anymore. So I move into my house a few months after buying it. I think I bought it in like February. I moved in May. And a couple weeks after that, my husband sends me a message on Facebook. And he grew up in the same small town I did and actually was friends with my two older brothers, which I mentioned earlier, one of them had passed. So I was like, this is crazy that I've known who this guy is for the past 9 years, but I've never talked to him or met him. So he sends me a message and he literally says that. He's like, so we've been friends on here for a long time, but we've never spoken to each other. I just thought you would like to know, like, I used to hang out with your brothers. And if you would ever like to grab a drink or get dinner sometime, I think we could maybe really hit it off based on like the things I know about you. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Okay. Okay. He has three daughters. So I had sworn up and down, I was like, I'm never being a step parent again. Because it's not easy. But I was like, I'll give it a shot. And we totally hit it off. And I mean, just again, I move fast. I move very fast. We said, I love you within 1 month. It was actually on July 4th that we said, I love you for the first time. And I literally were with a bunch of friends at the lake. And I said, fuck it. I love you. And he's like, I love you too. He was waiting for me to say it. And I'm like, of course. And that was the first day I actually met his girls too, which they were 13, 11, and 6 at the time. But he is so the opposite of what my ex-husband was. The funniest part of this whole thing, so July 4th was when we said I love you for the first time. The next day, I got a call from the county jail where I lived. And I'm like, what the fuck? Okay, I guess I'll pick it up. I don't make a habit of picking up phone calls from numbers I don't recognize, but it literally says blank county jail. This is a collect call from insert X's name here from the county jail.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, do you accept this call? And I'm like, yes. And he starts spieling off because you only have 1 minute. I got arrested, got a DUI this morning. Can you call a bailiff and get me bailed out? And I said, yes. Don't know why. Still the same. Don't know why. And I think it was just going back into that mode of like telling me what to do. And this person has always ordered me what to do. And I've always just complied with what he's told me to do. So I'm going to do what he's telling me to do. And so I called the bailiff. Bailiff didn't even know we were divorced because she knew who my ex was because he was well known in that community. And I was like, yeah, we're divorced. And she's like, oh, well, they won't let him out until he blows a zero. At this point, it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. He had gotten arrested at 3 a.m. and he still wasn't blowing a zero. So he was extremely intoxicated when he got pulled over.
Wow.
And I called my now husband, told him what was going on because I was like, I don't want to have secrets, but here's what's happening. And he's like, well, do what you feel is necessary. Then I called one of my really good friends at the time and she's like, no. Why would you help him out? So I texted his best friend and said, hey, so and so is in jail. Here's the bailiff that's going to bail him out. Have fun. And he's like, oh, okay. So he took care of it. And a little while later, my ex must have gotten another phone call and he called me again. And I said, your friend's handling it. I'm not dealing with this. Have a nice life. And I sent him a text after the call and said, please don't contact me anymore. And that was it.
Wow. Always love a happy ending. It's so sad to hear what the people I interview have to put up with in these relationships. Like, you come in with the best intentions. You see this guy, it's love at first sight. And little did you know, 8.5 years later, it was going to be a really tumultuous experience for you. And so I'm so happy that you found your quote unquote happy ending.
Thanks.
If you could give advice to women who really, or men too, who really resonate with your story, where they maybe aren't recognizing those signs of control, like, what advice would you give them to help keep kind of a keen eye for those kinds of manipulative behaviors?
I think one thing I learned was like narcissists will actually tell you exactly who they are, but you do have to see those red flags. And one of the biggest ones I think is projecting, and people talk about that. The amount of times where I wanted to go, like early on in the marriage, when I still had my younger friends that I wanted to go out with, he didn't ever want me to go out to any bars or clubs because, oh, I trust you. I just don't trust other guys. And like, who knows what they might do to you? Like, you're beautiful and you're small, and like, who might come up and do something to you? And like, just always was worried about that. I remember one time I started going to a new chiropractor because a lot of my coworkers went to him, and he and I had a blowout fight about it because the chiropractor apparently was too attractive and he was worried I would want to have sex with the chiropractor and was just really, really upset about that. And I realized now, okay, because that's something he would do. A lot of projecting there. And they also end up just being really, really insecure most of the time, I realized. I mean, why would you inject yourself with testosterone to get bigger muscles unless you're extremely insecure? Why would you buy giant dildos and pretty much make your wife use them unless you're really insecure? So there's just a lot there that he would show you.
Do you have any words of encouragement for women who, again, or men who are scared, honestly, to jump into the unknown? I think it takes a lot of courage to be single when you could stay in something that you might be able to work out, you might be able to fix it, but how would you encourage them to maybe choose the option where there's more unknown in being single?
I think going back to what I said earlier, which is I really asked myself the question, do you want to spend the rest of your life feeling like you do now? Do you want to do that? Do you want to be in this state where you can't even be yourself ever and you're walking on an eggshell? Like, do you want to do this for the rest of your life? At 30 years old, you've got a lot of life left in front of you. And is that something that you can deal with forever? And if the answer is no, even slightly, then you need to get out. You just have to. And you have to make it work. I was extremely grateful to have my mom to support me. So I had somewhere to go. And I know not everybody has that. Sometimes I wish I could go back and like move all of his stuff out, which if the stepson hadn't been there, that might have been what I would have done. Yeah, always ask yourself that because it's not worth it.
Tune in on Thursday for a breakdown bonus episode that is going to cover narcissism because this is a topic we have talked about ad nauseum. But I think because it's so widespread and so prevalent in so many people's relationships, it's really important to revisit and also remind ourselves about the signs we need to look out for in relationships. I'm by no means diagnosing this person with narcissism. This is just kind of an observation that was put in the submission that they believe that their ex was a narcissist. So why not talk more about those signs just in case you feel like you can relate to this story and if there are any similarities between the person you're with right now or maybe your exes, and it'll be a real healing thing for you to listen to. But I'll see you whenever you decide to tune in next.